Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We always welcome your comments, roundtable at wamc.org. That way you can be in on the fun as well, and it's not just us. Roundtable at wamc.org. Joining us this morning, newsman Ray Graff. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning, Joe.
Also joining us is University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
Rosemary. And WAMC's Alan Chartok has found his way to the corner. Good morning, sir.
As Ray would say, good morning, Joe.
Yeah, he said it very professionally.
Yeah.
Nice timber in his voice. Yeah.
You all have good timber. I would like some
timber.
Of that timber.
Oh, you got it.
Thanks for noticing. All right, let's talk about the news and what's going on, and where would you like to begin? You want to talk about the decline of the U.S., or would you like to talk about China first?
It's tied together, my friend.
Yeah, let's go with the U.S. in decline. This is a story that I pulled from the BBC. A new study by the Pew Research Center asks Americans what they think of their country's role in the world. For the first time in 40 years, a majority of Americans say the U.S. plays a less important and powerful role in the world than it did a decade ago. The Pew survey found that 70% of Americans saw the U.S. as less respected than in the past, nearly the same, 71%, as under President George W. Bush. More than half of Americans for the first time in 50 years said the U.S. should mind its own business.
Well, isolationism is nothing new in American history. It's an old, tough strain that keeps surfacing. And this survey doesn't seem very surprising to me in light of the lack of effectiveness and success we've had in how many decades of foreign policy now.
Well, you know, to me, the question is thinking about your very provocative statement, Rosemary.
I provoked already?
Yeah, you did. But is it depends on who's pulling the strings and what they want to get done. So we go, for example, into Iraq, we have a war there, which we quote win, little lopsided, and we say, well, did we get anything accomplished there? Well, Saddam Hussein is gone. But Saddam Hussein, who once was our friend, I believe, is now gone. So is this the company, the CIA? Is this all because it is serving the interests of the people, or is it specific to one class of America? Are you following me?
That's a little convoluted.
Yeah.
I think this is much simpler than that. I think this is, compare what's happening with America after wars in Vietnam, in Iran, Iraq, and in Afghanistan. Compare that with us in 1945, when we saved the world from darkness and then brought it all back, brought our allies back to profit. That's different. If you compare us now to 1945, which I think is the obvious comparison, we are in decline. It's just as simple as that.
But why are we in decline? In other words...
Wait a minute. Hold it.
Yeah.
This is a poll of people. This is like consumer confidence poll. This is what people think. This is not it's not a definite fact that, in fact, we are in decline. It's what people think. So let's bear that in mind. This is a survey of public opinion.
Okay, but Raymond, you as always make so much sense.
Indeed.
No, really. You make so much sense. But on the other hand, it's a democracy. And in a democracy, what people think counts. It counts a great deal.
No, I understand
it
that.
Counts for, well, if you don't understand it, just let me finish.
Fine.
Because it won't hurt you. And I'm just simply saying what they think is now reflected at the polls and everything else. And I think, therefore, this poll of what they think is very important. It's not that easily dismissed, as you indicate.
Jonathan Marcus, who is the BBC diplomatic correspondent, writes that the U.S. decline is only relative. Projections of China's inexorable rise are all very well, but there is no indication as yet that China harbors ambitions of playing the kind of global role traditionally the preserve of Washington. The survey results are arguably the product of two failed wars, political gridlock at home, and an uncertain economic outlook.
So?
You know, Fareed Zakaria of CNN, Time Magazine, and any other news media that he's infiltrated since I last checked, has long talked about how the U.S. is in decline. China is rising. Africa is rising. Latin America is improving. We're not the lone actor on the stage anymore. This survey doesn't even get at any of that.
Well, so, I don't know, but if you give everybody, there's another way to look at this. You give all of those people you just mentioned, Africans, Chinese, and others a chance. And
Belgians.
Belgians. And you give them all a chance. You say, okay, would you rather, would our people rather go there, or would you rather come here? You know what the result is going to be. Everybody wants to come to America, right?
Well, except that even that's changing, Alan. We're seeing that Mexicans, for example, who have flooded over the border into the U.S., that's
going
changed.
Back.
Yeah. It's now, that is changing. Is it still the situation now? Yes, but it is changing. It's not going to be in 25 or 30 years.
Well, I'm glad you have a crystal ball, but I'm not so sure. It's still, America is still the standard.
Okay, I'm sitting in my corner.
Wow. Very inclusive this morning,
you
aren't
kids
we?
Kids ought to play nice.
One of the other things about the poll that I found interesting is they were talking about threats to the United States. And while Islamic extremist groups such as al-Qaeda were still considered the top threat by survey respondents, 70% ranked cyber attacks from other countries as a major threat, placing them on par with concerns about Iran, North Korea, and their nuclear programs. Which I found interesting.
Maybe nobody else did. The sky is always falling, so let's just, you know, everybody get on with their lives, all right?
You mean the sky isn't falling?
No, the sky's not falling.
See, that part of the survey to me looked at just or kind of showed the sense of uncertainty and insecurity that we're feeling, that Americans are feeling.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I always feel insecure. I read the other day that there's this robbing of nuclear material
which in Mexico
can be used for a so-called dirty bomb. And I don't think about where a dirty bomb would be used. It would be used in New York City. It would be used in that's what terrorism is all about.
Right.
Maybe there are those people who can go sort of blithely along not worrying about what's possible in this world.
If you want to worry about everything, then you will not get along. In other words, there are threats all the time. There have been threats since the beginning of mankind, and I don't see how this helps us to say, well, we're all scared. Yeah, there's a lot of scary stuff out there. You have to persevere, right? Or maybe you don't. Maybe you'll go hide in your office.
Did any of you look up the wording of the survey? I could not find that or why they took this poll.
Well, they take the poll every year about the because they I mean they had results from what I saw both on the Pew site and the BBC the BBC links that it was a poll that they have been taking for decades. Hmm. But also because they go back to late 60s and even the late 50s, I think is how people felt about world power. I wanted to know, it was 2,000 adults, and it was conducted in late October through early November. What were you looking for specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to know the motivation of the poll. What were they trying to get at? And also the exact wording of the questions. You know, it's that idea that the U.S. is less influential. What exactly did they ask? And I couldn't find that.
Not in the BBC version.
Yeah, I went on their site too, and they have like long explanations.
They have very long explanations.
But I did not see the exact wording.
Exact questions. I think
you hit the nail on the head at the beginning. We probably should have stopped there. After World War II, there was nowhere to go but down.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's I'm sorry to seem like some kind of fussy-headed conspiratorialist, but I think it's very different. Things were really right after World War II. We did the right thing, as Rosemary says. It was a great. There's no such thing as a great war because a lot of people. But our purposes were pretty clear, and now I think our purposes by the people who are running all of this are a lot less clear.
Well, I can't disagree with that.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will get to other issues as well. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll return after this short break.
Support comes from Dr. Arthur Falk, Albany and Saratoga Springs, facial plastic surgeon and laser specialist focusing on minimally invasive procedures for skin health and facial rejuvenation. AboutFaceDOC.com. Harney & Sons Fine Teas, 200 different varieties of tea featuring holiday and special occasion tea gifts, gift baskets, accessories, and more. In Millerton, Soho, and online. Harney.com. And The Blue Marble, a world of gifts, Amherst, Massachusetts. Featuring handcrafted jewelry from around the world, thebluemarble.biz.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel this morning, and we welcome your comments roundtable at wamc.org. As my dear friend Raymond said just moments ago when I asked if you wanted to deal with China or the our place in the world, and Ray said
it's all
wings, my friend. It's all wings. So let's go to China. Chinese leaders push back at visiting Vice President Joseph Biden on Wednesday over what they assert is their right to control a wide swath of airspace in their bitterly contested East China Sea. But the Chinese also indicated that they had not decided how aggressively to enforce their so-called air defense identification zone, which has ignited tensions with Japan. Shuttling from one feuding neighbor to the other, Mr. Biden arrived from Tokyo to urge China to show restraint in the zone, which Mr. Biden said the United States regarded as illegitimate and a provocation.
It's good to have the Cold War back, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't this from an eerie sense of deja vu?
Yeah,
very
definitely. Much. Yeah. So what does this mean? What would I mean? How serious is this on our plate of things?
Well, there seems to be a different sort of look at it from some of the media, which are talking about China exercising its Monroe Doctrine type right to say, if you guys are going to say stay out of the Western Hemisphere, you should stay out of ours. I don't know why. I'm sure that there are internal politics in China with a change in administration there, which mean that you got to keep your military happy on the one hand, and on the other hand, you got to show the sort of progressive, if you want to use that term, a way of looking at freeing up the economy and giving some more civil rights. So I think in order to fully understand it, you probably ought to have to take a look at that. I mean, what are these things? They're a bunch of worthless rocks, you know, sitting down there on these islands. And there are people who believe that the Japanese in this are the provocateurs. There's been a good deal of analysis about that.
This story illustrates exactly what we saw in that poll, that America doesn't have influence. Here is Japan, which we basically have controlled since the end of the Second World War, and China. They have a dispute over islands. The islands in dispute are actually in the South China Sea, but this is they've declared this Arizona in the East China Sea. So it's fights all along the whole border. Exactly.
I'm showing a map here.
Which those of you listening
well
on the radio.
Right. Yes, but that the islands are sort of out of it. You're looking at a span for people who haven't looked at a map of about 100, 150 miles wide and maybe 400 or 500 miles high that are declared by both China and Japan.
But my point is that neither side is listening to what the U.S. has to say.
Right. Yes.
This is a battle between them, and they're saying to the United States.
And so there goes Joe Biden. He has to go over there, and
he
has to say,
hard assignment.
Yes,
wow.
Say to everybody, play nice. If you're right. But of course, I don't ever know who's telling who to do what.
Yeah. Of course, I also did like the American gesture, flying a fleet of bombers right through the air zone. Like, yeah, right.
Why did you say good, Ray?
Because you know what? This goes back to the old power play. Look, China the other day, I don't know if you saw this.
If they didn't do that, we wouldn't have had this map.
An official release from, or a quasi-official release from China. They're talking about putting, you know, military installations on the moon so that they can hit anywhere on the earth from with ICBMs from the moon. This just goes. This goes back to Russia and the 60s and 70s. It's all brinksmanship, and it'll all be worked out. This is. We've been through this. We've been through this.
Well, we don't have to go through it again, do we?
Sure, we do.
All right.
Whenever there are big powers at play, whether in decline or not, we're a big power. This is going to happen. There is friction. When the continental plates touch, there is friction.
I was trying to fully comprehend as to what the motive was as of November 23rd, where China declared the right to monitor this as their own.
Well, I did give you one theory.
Yes.
I hope you all listened to it, which is that the internal politics of China dictated that they do this. In order to
But like, why now and not 50 years ago?
Because we have a new president of China, who is considered to be loosening up the economic system and trying to do a little bit more. At least this is what I'm reading about allowing people to say what they want to say. And it may be that he needed to defend his right wing flank and military. Don't forget that the military in China are incredibly important. They own. I don't want to say half the businesses in China, but they run huge amounts. And if you want to worry about where the balance of power exists in China, I think you have to look at your military very carefully.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alan.
I was just going to say Kennedy did too here. He had, he had big problems on the Cuban Missile Crisis, and with the Air Force wasn't that long since MacArthur wanted to bomb China. Do you remember this?
Sure.
I mean, this is all part of what people have to contend with.
I was going to say that I see this as part of a resurgence of nationalism across the world. We don't talk a lot about international events on this program, but right now the Ukraine is in massive protests, trying to decide whether they're going to side with Russia or the EU. We have a new world order. We're seeing the same sorts of disputes throughout North Africa and the Middle East, of course, as people are rising up and asking for new powers against their governments and power against other tribes, if you will. And this is an old dispute between China and Japan.
Yeah.
We're seeing it again. Of course, I work in ex-Yugoslavia. It's all about one group versus another.
Sure.
Nationalism is still a huge power and a bad power in many places.
We're going to take a quick break, and we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. We have this one from a listener who says, it's a vast area of rich oil and mineral reserves, big time, more than brinksmanship.
The islands he's talking about that are in dispute.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Rich says, I agree, and this is about the U.S. in decline. He says, I agree that the U.S. influence is in decline as we continue to play by our own rules. Killing citizens of other countries in drone strikes does not hold up to the ideals we purport to live by. Rather, it breeds the hatred directed toward us. They don't hate us for our freedom. They hate us because we are bullies who do not respect the sovereignty of other nations. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel. Flashbacks from yesterday.
Oh, God.
Welcome to the program. Our good friend Bill Carter, TV writer for the New York Times, has written an article about Martin Bashir. Here's this story. Following a firestorm over his recent comments about Sarah Palin, the MSNBC host Martin Bashir resigned Wednesday, citing what he called his ill-judged comments. Mr. Bashir had been listed as being on vacation while the network faced heated criticism for not taking disciplinary action against him. The decision was prompted by a commentary Mr. Bashir directed last month against Ms. Palin, the former Republican vice presidential nominee, in which he criticized her for statements comparing American debt to slavery, saying she deserved the same kind of humiliating and degrading treatment that some slaves
faced. And what was that? You know what that was, because he said so.
Yeah, they don't say it in the New York Times. They take great pains not to say what he said.
Well, but we know what he said.
But it involved, defecation and all the rest of it,
and,
right?
And, yes, yeah. And he spelled out the word on the air. He later issued an apology.
Who?
Mr. Bashir later issued an apology on the air for the commentary. He then left for what he called a vacation.
Yeah.
I bet that was nice.
Sure.
And he went up to Alaska. He looked at Russia. In a statement the network released on Wednesday, Mr. Bashir said that he asked permission to take additional time around Thanksgiving. That led, he said, to further reflection.
Sure.
And a meeting with Phil Griffin, the president of MSNBC. Following that meeting, Mr. Bashir, who apparently had then finished reflecting, tendered his resignation.
So one and one makes two. He meets with the president and he resigns.
Yeah.
And he should be gone. He went way, way, way over the limit.
But I understand what was going on. I hate it and I don't like it. Which is, well, Ray, in some of the people that you may like more than others, like Rush Limbaugh or people like that, in fact, tend to try to make sure that they have nobody coming up behind them who can accuse them of having not been the top right winger. And in this case, you have a Bashir clearly doing the same thing.
He wants to make on the left,
making sure that nobody can say that you didn't go further than we would have gone.
Yeah, he's trying to be entertaining and provocative, all of which everyone here understands those.
Especially on NBC that has two viewers. I mean, he's doing what he can.
Now you know they don't have two viewers. They have fewer.
They have fewer than two.
Fewer than everybody else.
Than the other guys. And in fact, what station was Baldwin on? Was the same MSNBC?
MSNBC.
And he's gone after 2 weeks.
And you see, he was boring. So
was it a bad show?
I found the show boring. I only saw it a few times. I love him as an actor. I don't think he had any business whatsoever in news. His subjects were not thrilling any way over interviewed. But he was let go because of an anti-gay remark he made out of the street. I don't think it was part of his show, though.
Daily News photographer or a post reporter or something like
that. Because he was coming out of a trial.
And he said, get out of the way, you.
I think so.
That was regarded as being dead.
So let's get back to Martin Bashir. So here is a guy who had worked for, he was an anchor of Nightline. He was a correspondent for NBC's Dateline. He was a prominent BBC journalist for a long time.
He's a Brit, which we speculated have something to do with his absolute tin ear about this, that Palin talks about slavery in a way he doesn't like, so he commends her to treatment at the hands of slave masters. What? maybe to a Brit that sounds less clunky.
I mean, I think even the implication would be less, because I think Alan makes a good point about, you know, people on commentary television make outrageous statements all the time. Certainly Bill O'Reilly has been accused of this, as has Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity.
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh.
Awful. Let's go with the big kahuna there who does it every day on radio.
Awful.
But when you look at a cable news network, and one that is still trying to pass themselves as a news operation, that you are asking for, he is basically saying that a horrible act should be done to this woman, which is to me just completely off base, and anyone should know better.
Right, he's guilty of extremely bad taste, and that's all he's guilty of. In other words, he's not just because MSNBC is news, news network. There are commentators and there are opinion shows on all of these networks that are just that. O'Reilly, he's not a news guy. He's an opinion guy. So this guy is only guilty of going way over the good taste line. If he had paraphrased what he was going to say, no one complains about this. And the same two people are watching MSNBC. As of right now, everybody's talking about MSNBC.
Okay, let's do something about bad taste. I think you should be gone for that.
Yeah, but I agree.
I hope the public writes in and commends MSNBC for this and also starts demanding the resignation or firing or whatever it really was.
Of O'Reilly and
Limbaugh and the rest of them. Let's start talking like human beings.
But where does it stop? That's the question. You know, in other words, if we're going to have a society that does have free speech, then once this thing really starts up and everybody's after somebody for having said something offensive, where's the line?
Right. And I must confess, I don't watch O'Reilly or any of the or what's his name on MSNBC, Matthews or any of those people.
I don't like people yelling at me.
I don't like, I don't like people talking at the same time over each other.
What? But do they go to that length? In other words, I don't know if they say stuff this incendiary.
Oh, I think they do. I mean, they're all accused of. Are you talking about on
any of them?
Rush
whether
Limbaugh
left or right.
Called a young woman who was advocating medical coverage of contraception.
I remember that.
A slut.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's quite as bad as this.
He should have been fired immediately for that.
Yeah.
Well, and he's been fired. He's been let go and suspended before.
Does he own his own
back.
Show?
Wasn't there something about drugs?
Well, there was a drug.
Yeah, a small little thing.
Yeah, and he was away at rehab for a while, and he's back. But that was a number of years ago. We should also note that Martin Bashir had been suspended by ABC, and that led to his dismissal at ABC for making inappropriate comments, not on the air, but at a dinner for Asian American journalists a number of years ago. So there is a history here with him as well, and I think
I think the media does tend to go to the other extreme, and an offhand comment becomes cause for debasing and scandal and ruination of careers. Trent Lott is a good one, and who is Jimmy the Greek, who made comments about, I mean, they made stupid misstatements or comments that they didn't mean to have it. You know what I mean? Mm. And we cut them no slack at all. So we do tend to go too far in that direction, I think. However, in this case, it's so bizarre and so wacko what he was advocating.
Well, and
really.
This was written and premeditated.
Yeah.
I mean, it was planned.
Yeah.
And
I'm
it wasn't.
You, if MSNBC has put its money on the fact that they're going to be the left-wing station, without, of course, the Morning Joe, which I consider to be really, to be really reprehensible, and that is Joe Scarborough, and I think he is, of course, their way of pointing the finger and saying, see, we do balance, you know, around here. But they have put
He has his own issues, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Reprehensible,
yeah.
And you know, but
what are they?
Well, yeah, Joe, did you want to say what they were?
No, I don't really want to. Get it. There have been about his past and
he's a Republican congressman.
When he was a congressman.
Okay.
Yeah.
But just the fact that was a Republican congressman doesn't matter to you.
No.
It's the sneering and the talking down and the rest of it.
Google. This is what Google is for.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
Let's take a break, actually, and we'll give people time to Google, and then we'll be back, and we'll continue our conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Unison Arts Center New Paltz, a Sunday salon presentation of cellist Alice Yu and violinist Michelle Ross for an afternoon of music and conversation. Sunday, December 8th at 2, unisonarts.org. Sunflower Natural Food Market, Woodstock, specializing in locally made, handcrafted, and organic gift selections, including natural bath and body lotions, salts, and potions. Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. And Green Conscience Home and Garden, Saratoga Springs, New York, a green design showroom dedicated to healthy interiors with non-toxic flooring, wall finishes, beds, and more. Green-conscience.com.
Thank you very much.
It's like a little club soda, a palate cleanser.
Yeah, that's right, a little palate cleanser.
What do they call that, the little ice cream thing that they give you between the...
What is
I should have asked the chef yesterday.
Hey, we heard that very good program yesterday with the French chef.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, boy.
Dominique Brialy.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I actually want a recording of it to use in classes on teaching interviewing. That was a difficult interview.
Well because one of them had language issues.
Yeah, the
Everything
language
was
issues
fine.
and it was kind of an elitist topic, and you did well with it.
Yes, you did, Ray.
All right, fine.
You're as good as gold.
Okay. Get ready, Dave. I may need another palate cleanser.
Boy, so do I.
Wow.
Bourbon.
All right.
Too much inside baseball here.
Yes.
I love Norman Rockwell.
Me too.
Me too. Let's talk about Norman Rockwell. Three paintings by Norman Rockwell celebrating homey small-town America, among the most popular of his 322 covers of the Saturday Evening Post, sold to Sotheby's on Wednesday morning for a total, catch this, $57.8 million twice their estimate, which was extremely high.
Now, one of them was 46 million itself.
Yeah, that was
saying grace.
And the way, you could have seen these in the wonderful Norman Rockwell Museum on Route 183 in Stockbridge. But now they're sold, and they were
Are they going into private collections?
We don't know.
This story was interesting to me first because I do love Norman Rockwell, and I have been to that museum many times.
That awful woman just wrote a book in which she sort of cast aspersions on his maleness. In other words, calling him names and all the rest of it.
Well, I think she indicated in the book that he was depressed, and often had mental issues. And the reason that he moved to Stockbridge was the close proximity to Austin Riggs, and then there was an event.
She's
going to be on the air. It's actually a fascinating.
But the relatives are basically very annoyed.
But I mean, isn't that par for the course for an artist? I mean, so many.
Wait a second! Now, just be careful.
No, what I'm saying is, you have to be emotionally on an edge. You have to be open. Your mind is open to that.
Do you consider me an artist?
Not at all, sir.
Okay, I want to bring this onto an entirely different track.
Thank you.
The sale of these pictures was very interesting to me because it comes out at the same time that we have a major debate in Detroit about the fate of the paintings in the Detroit Museum.
Should they sell them?
Right. They're owned by the city, which we've discussed is in bankruptcy, great need to pay off debt. So should the city be required to, or even on its own volition, sell these wonderful paintings that belong to the public in order to pay off
debt? Well, if it's a pension versus... selling the painting, which should come first?
I knew you were going to put it that way, and for me, it's the paintings.
So keep the paintings?
They're a cultural treasure.
Rosemary, you're saying keep the paintings and the pensioners come second after the paintings? I can hardly believe that. That is not worthy of you.
Well, what does the Chapter 9 say? Well, what are the terms of the bankruptcy? Do they have to sell their assets?
The judge is looking at this askance because, like me, he thinks that these are cultural treasures that belong to the city. How awful to be in bankruptcy,
losing everything, and now the teacher lives in poverty.
The question, Alan, is how much money could you bring in for these paintings? Would you even make a small dent in the
in
the debt?
I mean, I think this is terrible, the idea that you wouldn't sell the paintings and you would let the teacher go hungry who depended on what she was going to be or he was going to be getting for the rest of his life. And then,
as Alan often says, there are many ways to attack a problem. So my inclination would be to hold on to the paintings just as long as you could. That's the last thing I would want to sell off.
Well, I don't
agree with that.
Well, also, if you sell the paintings, and I don't know how many paintings or how much they're worth, but there's no guarantee that then the lady, the pensioner who will lose her house, is going to get her full pension.
No,
$60 million
That doesn't have to be worthy of you, Ray. That's spurious logic. Who said that if you sell the paintings, the lady gets her pension?
Well, what's the money going to go to?
Pay off debt.
That's right.
The money goes to paying off debt,
and you're saying, "Okay, you pensioners, you come."
No. I'm just saying that there's no guarantee that she will get her full pension.
We understand that.
Really?
Yeah, but it'll be. What do you mean, really? It'll be something.
You're going for a symbolic or maybe an insufficient effort to pay off a debt. But you're actually solidly losing something of great value. I mean, what makes a city? Is it that people have pensions in it or that it has wonders, that it has public in common treasures?
I mean, realizing that there's a very different circumstances, but during world wars, we went to great pains to save our treasures that were in danger and to embrace them and to bring them out of harm's way so that they could be protected for the people in the future.
Right.
I think selling them off, and there's also something to be said as a collection and not as an individual item, but as a collection.
There's a reason these paintings sell for the millions of dollars. They are worth so much to us as humans, as a symbol of civilization.
Yeah, well, you know who the great Rockwell collectors are, H. Ross Perot, and Steven Spielberg,
George Lucas,
and we don't know who bought these, but you know, to some people.
I hope it's someone who'll keep them out for public view sometimes.
Well, you never know. It could be a Saudi prince,
sure,
for example, who might put it in the basement.
Right. Or
well, if you buy it, you can do whatever you want. But I think that's more to the point that they should be for the people. They've always been for the people, and they should be protected in some way, shape, or form.
So let's see if this is a 3-to-1 discussion, as I think it is. I think the three of you would be polled to say, you know, I don't know about Ray exactly yet, but the two of you.
Keep the paintings.
Keep the paintings, and, you know, the teachers can go to hell.
That's not a really accurate portrayal of my point of view.
No, I mean, I think actually a brilliant gentleman yesterday on this program, I believe his name was Alan, said that
were there two Alans on the show?
If there was a will, there was a way, and there were other ways of making the money, and there were other ways of getting out of the situation, and I agree with that, and I don't think that selling your art holdings is one of them.
Depends on how much they're worth. I mean, if it's $10 million, it's chump change. It doesn't change a thing.
Well, it's more than $10 million, but it's a principle of the thing. It seems to me.
Okay, so you're in favor then of the pensioner not.
The pensioner comes before the painting.
One more story about art and paintings that I want to commend to listeners was in the New York Times recently about in Austria, the son of a Nazi era art dealer has been living for years with an amazing collection behind a curtain in his bedroom that was stolen or you know, taken under duress.
Yeah, front page story in the Times.
Yeah, amazing story. But, you know, and he was like Gollum with the ring, you know, I want my treasures. He had no real
precious life.
Precious, yeah. So I think that art is really deep in the human soul, and to treat it just as a matter of monetary gain or loss, it's just wrong.
I'm done.
Yeah, I mean,
I've said mine.
There are all sorts of arguments that you can make, but
I'm a big Rockwell fan. I love Rockwell. I think.
Why didn't you buy it?
I don't like this. Well, I could make a certain down payment.
Right. I mean, one of the problems I have is that the minute you start, I mean, obviously the troubles obviously the troubles in Detroit are very severe. However, the second that it became apparent and the court ruled in the bankruptcy, the first thing that was talked about was taking the paintings and the artwork. It's the same thing when we have budget troubles. The first thing we look at is going after the arts and going after the
or the band
and
high school
programs,
band.
Right.
Yeah.
And
the
and
arts program,
schools.
Music and arts in schools. And I, you know, if we get to that point, okay, but I want there to be a long, thorough discussion about it. I don't want it to be the first thing that's looked at. And I just think it's a very odd way that we have of attacking the arts as the first line of defense and trying to save cash.
Well, very well said. And I think our community is an artistic community, mm-hmm. and we'll second it. But I also think that there are people out there, teachers, who are saying, what if this precedent means that they take my pension away now? And, you know,
but
and
again,
that has to be sacrosanct.
But again, I don't know that the two are linked.
Oh, they are absolutely linked. It's a zero-sum game. In other words, there's a certain amount of money, if the teachers have to have the money taken away because there are no other ways at it, I think that the
sell City Hall and leave the museum.
And sell City Hall also. Sell City Hall also. It's a good idea.
They have a zoo, too, right?
Yeah.
They have a zoo. We're going to sell the giraffe.
Sell the animals.
Sell the giraffe. Find a guy named Noah, and you're all set.
Can you afford a giraffe, Alan? It's not a Norman Knockwell painting.
You'd need a pretty big ladder.
I have a giraffe. My giraffe loves me. I feed my giraffe by the greenberry tree.
I have him doing poetry. You have really lost control of the little giraffes. All
the little giraffes go. They make a sound.
I'm filling in as guest host when Joe's away, and I got to tell you, that's not going to fly next week. Just
you're not going to allow this.
No,
way?
There'll be no weird nursery rhymes and such, et cetera.
Suddenly, no, I like this Jabberwocky effect of the program. So, does anybody have any final comments on our last minute? We have 1 minute left.
No.
I hope none of my students are listening.
No,
you're not proud of your work today.
No, I think you guys are. I think you guys have made a series of spurious arguments.
Excellent. We thank you very much for joining us. If you would like to get in on the fun and add your spurious argument to our discussion, we welcome you to do so. It's Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Arameo, thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow. Raymond, I know you'll be here as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay.
The secret is giraffes make no sound at all.
That is the secret.
That makes two of us.
And
three.
Wow. We still have like a good minute, and the panel has just left the room.
Well, two of them. I'm still here. Don't worry, Joe.
Thank you very much,
Alan. I'll save you.
We'll be back after this short break.